This week, Congress left Washington for its spring recess, having spent most of its time on health care reform legislation in the recent past. Sitting unfinished on the table, though, the U.S. Senate failed to extend the federal program of unemployment insurance benefits, even though the program is scheduled to expire a week before they return. Good morning. I'm Veronica Rickard. I'm in this week for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, why the lag in unemployment benefits happened and what it means for more than 200,000 Americans. Our guests this morning are John Stanton for the first part of the hour and David Drucker. Both are staff writers at Roll Call, the newspaper of Capitol Hill. John Stanton, a 13-year veteran of Washington journalism, he previously covered Congress for National Journal's Congress Daily. And we're happy to take your calls this morning. Tell us how you feel about the expiration in unemployment benefits. Is the Senate justified in the lag, having just finished the all-consuming battle over health care reform? What do you expect from your Congress? The number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. And our email is talk@wpr.org. And John Stanton, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Well, would you set the stage for us here? What happened in leading up to this lag in unemployment benefits?
Well, basically what happened was that the last few days before the Senate left for their Easter vacation, they finished up the health care bill that everyone was sort of watching, and Democrats had expected to be able to pass another sort of one-month extension to the unemployment benefits. This is the same sort of bill that Senator Bunning filibustered in February. And ironically, as Democrats were holding sort of a celebratory press conference off the Senate floor, Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican leader, and Senator Tom Coburn, a Republican from Oklahoma, who is one of the strongest sort of backers for paying for everything that the Congress does, took the floor and used sort of procedural tactics to force a debate on whether or not to pay for this one-month extension. Democrats argue it's an emergency spending provision and therefore it doesn't have to be paid for. Republicans disagree. And what ended up happening is that the Senate, Democrats and Republicans, came to a deal to have a one-week extension that would have gotten it through till this coming Monday. However, the House Democrats basically said, no, we don't want to do that, and the Senate left without doing it. And so unemployment insurance has now lapsed.
Has this happened before?
It's happened before. It happened for a few days last year. There have been some in the past sort of gaps in the unemployment insurance. The biggest problem is not so much people getting their checks, but the cost to the states on these sort of short-term gaps, because it takes a lot of extra time and money to go back and retroactively give people their benefits and to sort of re-up their employees and that kind of thing. So.
Well, and I suppose there's a concern that some people might not know that their ineligibility is temporary and they might not check in for it again.
Well, that's another big concern, absolutely. And also, frankly, there is a concern that what happens if they don't get it done. They're expected to begin the process of doing another one-month extension on Monday, and Democrats look like they have the votes to probably do that, but that could take several days, so some folks could see sort of a short-term gap in their benefits, and there is a concern that they may not try to get back into the program.
Were Democrats blindsided by what happened, by the roadblocks here?
I think they were. I think that, you know, after what happened with Senator Bunning and sort of how badly the Republicans got beat up over that, they did not expect Republicans to sort of do this again, especially with the recess looming. I mean, a recess is basically the biggest hammer that Harry Reid has to force people to do things, generally speaking, because all these members want to go home. They don't want to stay in Washington. And so they sort of assumed that they would just agree to this and go ahead and do it. But, you know, Republicans sort of held the line and said, no, we're not going to do this. And I do think it caught the Democrats a little bit by surprise.
And what about Senator Coburn? Tell us about his role.
Well, he's sort of interesting. He basically came forward and said, look, I think we have to pay for this one-month extension. We've been doing these over and over again. We should pay for them. We could use some stimulus money to do it. And he and Senator McConnell and Senator Reid sort of began negotiations on the Senate floor for several hours two Fridays ago. And, you know, he ultimately agreed to this sort of 1 week extension using some, I think, stimulus money to pay for that short term extension, and was more than willing to let that go through and then come back on Monday and start fighting over whether or not to pay for the full month. It was in the end, House Democrats, though, said they did not agree with that, that they didn't feel that it was appropriate to allow essentially Senator Coburn to dictate when something should be paid for. So
what's the motivation on his part? Was this a kind of publicity stunt, or is this an example of the extreme bipartisanship in a post-healthcare reform era?
I think he's an interesting character. He's not the most partisan person. He comes off that way because he's very aggressive in his positions. Senator Coburn, though, generally speaking, is a very much a fiscal hawk. He really believes that everything should be paid for. He believes in cutting spending. He's one of the leaders of sort of the anti-earmark movement, and a lot of this sort of stemmed from that. For the broader Republican Party, though, I do think that there is a certain amount of politics being played here. They were looking for a way to transition out of the health care fight and into sort of a broader economic and spending fight with Democrats, and this gave them the perfect opportunity.
What's the reaction so far?
Well, it's interesting. Because the Senate Democrats had agreed to this sort of 1 week extension, it's muted a little bit their ability to sort of fight back against Republicans. And so there hasn't been quite the outcry that we saw with Senator Bunnings. Also, Senator Bunnings was a pretty good target for Democrats. He's not very well liked, frankly, amongst Republicans. He's sort of a prickly character. A lot of his colleagues find it difficult to work with him. So they had a lot of success fighting over that. This one, they've not been doing as much fighting. Although you are already starting to see stories at the local level of people becoming concerned about losing their benefits, I think that as you see these stories through the rest of the week, you may see more talk about this.
Yeah, there hasn't been that much in the papers. There's been some, but it hasn't been grabbing big headlines. What would it take to get the big headlines?
I think that when we get closer to the actual fight in the Senate, you'll start to see some of the bigger headlines. You'll have a full 4 or 5 days where the program has lapsed. People, frankly, a lot of reporters have been on vacation because of the Easter recess with all the members back home. They haven't had a sort of a time to come up with coordinated efforts. But I think as we get towards the end of this week and into the weekend, you'll start to see more of this. And then on Monday, when they have this first procedural vote on passing a one-month extension, that's when you'll really start to see the pressure.
Now, doesn't this bill also have something to do with the funding for COBRA, with Medicare payments to doctors, and I think the National Flood Insurance Program, too?
It does. It does. The UI program sort of overshadows a lot of that stuff, but, the COBRA benefits are obviously very important to folks. Flood insurance, especially with, sort of what's been happening in the Northeast, is a big issue right now. So there are a number of other things that are affected by the bill. And some of those programs already have lapsed on the 1st of April, whereas unemployment lapsed on the 5th.
How risky a gambit do you think this is for Republicans to be obstructionist on this?
I think it's a pretty big gamble for them, frankly. Issues like unemployment or welfare or sort of social issues have always been, the Republican Party's Achilles heel. Whereas Democrats get hit pretty hard on national security issues, and so the public generally sees them as being weaker on national security. On social issues like these, the public generally sees Republicans as being less sympathetic to the poor. And they are playing sort of a dangerous game, I would think, with this. It depends on how they sort of play their cards, though. They could come out of this thing looking quite good if they're able to sort of push this to the point where, it gets attention but then backing off or something like that. But it is definitely a gambit for them.
What is their desired outcome?
Their argument is that they would like to see fiscal responsibility sort of put back into place. And they argue that if not now, when? And that, it's time for everybody, themselves included, they argue, to start being serious about paying for everything that the government does. And most of them agree that the unemployment insurance should be extended, but they want to see some sort of payment for it. So
it sounds like they're really walking that fiscal responsibility line, and it could have been this issue or it could have been another issue.
That's certainly their argument. Democrats obviously have sort of countered that they've never done it in the last 8 years, that the Bush administration was very big on deficit spending and that Republicans in the House and Senate didn't say anything about that. And that, they always only seem to be picking these issues that affect the poor to make their stand.
Well, let's go ahead and get our callers in on this. We're happy to hear from you this morning. Tell us how you feel about the expiration in unemployment benefits. Is the Senate justified in the lag? Do you want to see the fiscal responsibility call taken up again by Republicans? And what do you expect from your Congress? You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. And our email is talk@WPR.org. And our first caller now, Rick, joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Rick.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'd like to talk about this in terms of the larger, powers that any administration has to deal with an economic debacle of this size. I mean, number one, they've got fiscal policy, and number two, they've got monetary policy. President Obama is a former teacher, I'd like to grade him on these two general categories. Number one, on monetary policy, I'd say he gets an A double plus, simply because he got lucky enough to be introduced to a guy named Timothy Geithner, who, from what I've read about him, is literally kind of a 007 license to kill agent of the banking system, who's got a terrific IQ and knowledge of how the banking system and bankers work. And single-handedly, this man, who's Secretary of the Treasury, I believe, has saved our banking system. But on the fiscal policy, I think this administration maybe deserves a C-plus for all kinds of reasons. Number one, that stimulus bill was very, very poorly crafted. Mainly, it seems like the money went to people that were supporters of the Democrat Party, such as the teachers' union. And believe me, I got nothing against teachers. Both of my parents were teachers. But teachers in Milwaukee, for instance, they already have jobs where they get $100,000 a year in benefits and pay after a certain minimum years. And shoveling money after people who already have jobs is not helping here. Basically, I think that we're going to have, because of this, unemployment for many years to come at a very high rate, when this all could have been dealt with earlier in the administration. I would have even gone for something like the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps, you know, especially in some of our western states that have these huge national monuments and national forests. There's lots of fire load there that needs to be dealt with, old dead trees to be cut down and whatnot. You could hire, you know, hundreds of thousands of young men to do that and, you know, pay them a little over minimum wage. It'd be a good thing for all things, everyone considered. But I want to construct other employment programs, too. And I really think the administration has been sitting on their hands here.
A lot there to chew on, John Stanton. What do you think about some of the thrust of Rick's comments?
Well, I think it's interesting. You know, he raised a bunch of sort of interesting points about the general sort of philosophical approach that the administration has taken, and you know, some of his arguments about like having the CCCs put in, for instance. You know, there was at the beginning of the administration, there was a push by a number of progressive members of the House and Senate to have the White House pursue policies like that, and the administration, particularly Rahm Emanuel, his chief of staff, sort of understood that was probably too far to the left, frankly, for them to be able to navigate successfully through Congress and through the court of public opinion. And they've tried to find a way to sort of walk a line where the government is involved as much as possible, but still sort of doing it through helping small businesses or helping private industry and things like that. And it's this sort of unspoken tension that goes on in Washington, you know, at the sort of nuts and bolts level of a lot of these things, like unemployment policies and economic stimulus policies, of which way you sort of go as a nation. So,
do you think we'll ever see anything like Rick was talking about in terms of maybe not like a CCC, but maybe more a creation of green jobs and renewable energy jobs in that sector?
Well, the Senate and House are actually have this sort of, they call it the jobs agenda that they're working on this year, and they're getting ready to do right now a small business sort of support bill that they're going to take up after they do unemployment this coming week. Then they're going to do the financial regulatory reform bill that folks have been talking about, and then the next thing on their agenda at this point, at least, is in fact a sort of a green jobs and energy jobs legislation.
And the census has to be helping the unemployment figures, too, right now.
It is. You know, it's funny. The administration is trying to downplay its impact as much as possible because I think that they understand that starting at the end of August, those jobs are going to start to disappear. And that by the time we get back to sort of November and the election, none of those jobs will be in play, and the unemployment rate may go up a little bit because of that. And so while sort of saying, well, look, we've got all these new jobs, they are sort of explicitly saying, you know, this is only very temporary with this particular piece of that pie. So,
well, thank you to Rick for the call, and on to Matt in Milwaukee. Hi, Matt.
Hi. My comment is that I kind of think that as a younger voter, I'm concerned about the fiscal responsibility of the Democrats in Washington. I mean, I consistently see things that down the road I'm going to have to pay for sure. And I really don't. I definitely support the Republicans on this issue, and I'm somebody who might not have said that 2 or 3 years ago, but I'm going to have to go ahead and applaud the Republicans for at least standing up for my future and the future of everybody's children and grandchildren. I think it's important that we bring that issue up, that we can't afford this extension of unemployment benefits. We can't afford health care reform. It's just not viable right now, and it's unfortunate that people are going to be hurt by losing their unemployment benefits or not getting access to health care. But I think that Republicans have proposed their alternative solutions that really do make sense. So that's kind of my comment as a younger voter in America today.
Matt, when you're worried about fiscal accountability, are you thinking of that as a partisan issue that's the Republicans' watch?
Well, you know, I think that a lot of the things Democrats have done, they don't actually have the money to be spending. So that's an issue for me being, you know, 20 and definitely being alive for probably hopefully another 60 years or so, is that sooner or later we're going to have to start paying for this. And that's really a big issue for me as a younger voter. And I know several of my friends feel the same way.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call.
Thanks.
John Stanton.
Well, you know, it's actually sort of an interesting comment. You know, one of the things Republicans have been trying to do is trying to find a way to reach out to younger voters like Matt and find a way to sort of touch base with them. And, you know, for years they've tried to sort of say, look, we are looking out for you because of how the debt is going to get piled on top of you and you're going to end up paying all these bills. And it hasn't seemed to sort of struck much of a chord until the last year. I mean, you do see a fair number of sort of younger people being involved in some of the Tea Party protests. You see a greater sort of interest amongst conservative young people in being actively engaged. And it's interesting to see that the sort of the youth dynamic and demographic isn't sort of starting to split more similar to the rest of the country.
Hmm. And another call here, we've got Jim with us from Milwaukee. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I'm really frustrated by callers like the gentleman a few calls ago talking, or just the last call, about this issue of fiscal responsibility and attaching the responsibility for that to the Obama administration. Now, I'm a registered Republican. I did not vote for Obama, you know, early on. I was not a supporter. But I think America, the thing that frustrates me the most is this idea of memory. And it was Ronald Reagan who came into office and said he was going to shrink government down, the Grover Norquist model, and in fact ran up record deficits like the country had never seen before. And then Bush followed up on that. It was a Democrat, Bill Clinton, who brought fiscal discipline back, ran up a surplus that George W. Bush turned into, after his hero, self-admittedly Ronald Reagan, the biggest deaths the country had ever seen before. And so I think it's irresponsible of us to get locked into a short-term picture of things without looking at the historical record. If you look at the last 25 years, you'd have to say the Democrats have the track record of being far more fiscally responsible. That's all right.
All right. Thanks a lot for that call, Jim. And Jim, voicing what you hear a lot from Democrats, that they're the ones who have stepped in and cleaned up the mess, but it doesn't seem to stick with the Democrats. The Republicans usually claim that territory, don't they?
They do, you know, and it's always been sort of their their sort of territory to live in. And it is interesting to watch. You know, Democrats I know here in Washington are very frustrated by this, frankly. You know, they say, look, we inherited 8 years of deficit spending. We inherited two wars. We inherited an economy that was a wreck. And people seem to have forgotten that. And, you know, Republicans counter, well, you're in charge now. You have to own this mess. And Democrats, to a large degree, you know, have sort of just accepted that as sort of the way things work. And I do think that they have not done as much of a job of sort of trying to put it back on Republicans and trying to keep that memory alive as they could have. But at the same time, you know, the American public sort of attention span is a little shorter these days, frankly, and it's hard for them to keep people focused on that while they're also trying to say what they're trying to do to fix the problems. And so they find themselves in a very difficult position.
Thank you to Jim. And on to Bill, calling us from Madison. Welcome, Bill.
Hello, am I on the air?
Yes, you are. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear the click.
That's okay.
I get frustrated because I get frustrated with both parties. I myself tend generally vote Democratic, but I get frustrated with both political parties because, especially the Republicans, because they bang the drum about fiscal responsibility and how are we going to pay for this. And it's always comes up when there's matters that deal with programs that benefit ordinary Americans or Americans that are being hit hard, like we have now by this recession. Yet both parties, but I have to say the Republicans probably deserve more of the blame, don't even question the hundreds of billions of dollars that we spend essentially maintaining what is a multinational empire. I mean, the United States is technically not an empire. I know we don't go out there and conquer countries and take over governments, at least not overtly. But we spend a lot of time going overseas, supposedly protecting our security, whereas most of the rest of the countries of the world, including great powers, seem to get along fine without feeling it necessary to maintain these huge military presences all over the world. And this bothers me that no one talks about fiscal responsibility when it comes to, $10 billion aircraft carriers.
All right. Thanks to Bill for that call. And, of course, you know, Bill also talking about this age-old argument that the Republicans don't care about spending when it comes to war. They only care when it comes to social programs. And the Democrats say the Republicans, well, the vice versa for the Republicans, who say that the Democrats are willing to spend on all these social programs that maybe people don't want. What is your take, John Stanton?
Well, it's interesting. You know, on military spending, it's definitely one of the sort of classic third rails of politics in the United States. It's like Social Security cuts. You know, if you start talking about change Social Security, it terrifies older Americans, and they vote in disproportionate numbers to the rest of us, and you know, politicians just won't go there. And the same with the military, that any time you begin discussing cuts to the military's budget, it automatically gets portrayed by your opponent as, you know, you're weak on national security, you're weak on the military, and no one wants to be seen that way. And so, you know, Republicans, whereas they will cut some social programs, they are willing to do that on sort of the discretionary spending type of programs. They won't do it there. Democrats sort of don't want to do it in either place, frankly. They don't want to mess too much with the military budget, and they definitely don't want to cut some of the discretionary spending. And so, you know, they do. There is this sort of strange tension there.
Well, John Stanton, I know we have to say goodbye to you now, and in a moment we'll pick up with your colleague David Drucker from Roll Call, but thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
John Stanton, a staff reporter for Roll Call, covering the United States Senate. He is a 13-year veteran of Washington journalism. Stanton previously covered Congress for National Journal's Congress Daily. And we'll keep going with this topic after we take a quick break here, and we'll take some more of your phone calls. You can tell us how you feel about the expiration in unemployment benefits. Is the Senate justified in the leg? Is Congress doing what you expect and what you would want them to do? You can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. And our email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickard, back with you this Wednesday morning. I'm in this week for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. As we talk this morning about the lapse of unemployment benefits as Congress goes to spring break. And we're joined now by David Drucker, staff writer at Roll Call. He has covered the U.S. Senate and broad national political trends for Roll Call, a widely read and influential Inside the Beltway publication focusing on the inner workings of Congress. And David Drucker, thanks so much for joining us.
Good to be here. Thank you.
What is your take on what happened this past week as Congress went to recess?
Well, this is what happens in an election year when both sides believe they have to have the upper hand or are looking for the upper hand, and decide to play a game of brinksmanship, if you will. Clearly, everyone in the U.S. Senate, you know, believe it or not, agrees with extending unemployment benefits. And that makes this interesting, because this wasn't a disagreement over whether the extension should have been approved or not. What this was Republicans on the one hand believing that they have the political upper hand in demanding that the extension be paid for by offsetting other government spending or using already appropriated government spending and moving it around to pay for this, versus Democrats who are looking to score political points. They're under pressure as the midterm elections approach, and they really wanted to put Republicans in a box, in a political box, and in a sense force them to vote against people who really need these benefits to get by day to day. And this is what happens when politics begins to overtake the legislative process.
Well, you said Republicans believe they have the upper hand. Do they?
Well, it's hard to tell, but I think that they have a case to make. A lot of public polling that I've been looking at shows that a broad swath of likely voters really are concerned about the federal deficit in a way that I have not seen in the past. Every year, going back at least 20 years that I've been, you know, following it in some fashion, whether as a regular person or as a journalist, everybody always complains about the deficit and says that they want to fix it. But what I've generally found is people aren't that concerned, and the only people on Capitol Hill who don't like deficits are the people who don't control the purse strings, and that's usually the minority party, or, you know, in a party without somebody in the White House. But, you know, what we've seen with the deficit reaching unprecedented levels over the last year or two is that it appears that people are really concerned. And so when Republicans make the case that they want to approve this extension of unemployment and other benefits, but they simply want it to be paid for and not added to the deficit, I think they may have a political case to make, and they may be on solid ground. On the other hand, whenever you can be blamed for standing in the way of health benefits and unemployment benefits for people who are hurting, and clearly the economy is still rough and many, many people are hurting, it's politically tricky.
We're going to go to our phones now and pick up some phone calls. We've got Charles joining us from Coon Valley. Hi, Charles.
Hello.
Hey, go ahead.
Yeah, the Republicans seem to have a real problem with paying for unemployment. At least that's what they say. The solution is really simple. For each 1% of unemployment over 5%, just raise the income tax on those earning over $250,000 by 1%. And this is, I think, appropriate because they're the ones benefiting most from the current economic conditions, and also they are the ones benefiting most from earnings from exported jobs. And this would be an incentive to invest their money in a way that would create jobs in this country.
Okay, thanks for the call, Charles. David Drucker.
Well, the caller represents a point of view that's out there, but again, I think it depends on how you frame this. You know, clearly, if this issue becomes framed over who's doing well and who isn't, it could be a problem for the Republicans. But if they're successful in framing this issue over simply wanting to ensure that the extension is paid for, and they've offered proposals, by the way, to pay for this, including, I believe, using existing appropriated funds that came out of the TARP program, the Troubled Asset Relief Program that was meant to prop up the big banks. If you can frame it around that, then I think they will have a case to make and not necessarily be penalized over this.
How do they have to go about making the case?
Well, I think if you point to the deficit, I think if you point to the fact that taxes are set to go up under the new health care program, I think if you point to the fact that economic growth remains not, it is happening, but it is not super strong. The unemployment rate is not going down, even though jobs are now beginning to be created. If they can control the political messaging in that sense and say that all they want to do is ensure that the deficit doesn't go any higher, then that's, in a sense, how I would go about making the case if I were them, and that's what they are trying to do. If it was simply, and don't forget, that's different than saying they oppose the extension. I think if the Republicans were saying they oppose the extension on the grounds that if they were opposing the extension on the grounds that the country can't afford it, they would be in deep political trouble over that over time. I think by saying they support the extension but simply want it paid for, it gives them a chance to end up on the political high ground. But again, as I've said, this is tricky, and they're not guaranteed to win the argument.
And what about those unemployment figures? They've been interpreted differently across the media. There have been jobs created, I guess, and that's positive, the last thing we heard, but the unemployment rate is not falling. What's going on there?
Well, it's just a matter of statistics. With a country as big as ours and an economy as big as ours, you need to not just create jobs to keep pace with people coming into the labor market. You need to create a certain amount of jobs to actually bring the unemployment statistic down. And so for the economy to really grow, for the unemployment rate to go from 9.7%, which is where it stands, down a couple of points, let alone a half a point, you need to do more than simply create net jobs every month. You need to create a certain amount. So I think that what you're seeing reported is simply the fact that it appears that the economy has turned a bit of a corner and that jobs are being created, net jobs, but the economy is just simply not yet creating enough jobs to move a significant number of people off the unemployment rolls.
Have we seen, if you look at the economics of the past, that same pattern, that the unemployment figure lags?
Well, I think that unemployment is often seen as the lagging indicator in the end of a recession. But I think that what we're dealing with now is something we haven't seen since the 1970s in terms of the size, scope, and strength of the recession that we were in and the number of jobs that we were lost. And so, you know, we experienced periodic dips in the late 80s, early 90s, late 90s, early 2000s. But you didn't see a massive uptick in unemployment. And when we experienced those recessions, often the economy came roaring back over the course of a year or two at the most. And, you know, what we're seeing here is the fact that unemployment was over 10% at one point nationally. It remains well into the double digits in several states, including, you know, California, which was often a big economic engine for the country. There's still a bit of a global lag going on, and so it's going to take more to get out of this recession in terms of the unemployment rate than simply the positive economic growth indicators that we've seen, which are positive. But again, there's a difference between that and actually getting people back to work by the millions, which is what we need.
Let's pick up another phone call here. Jill calls us from Suamico. Hi, Jill.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I hope you can hear me fine. I have several observations as a 55-year-old educated RN, married to a man who is 63 years old and a master plumber and highly skilled in all trades. There is no work in a few months in his company where he, at the best of the trades, were building very expensive yachts. And I want to address this a comment to the young adults and beyond. We are an ancient society, and our knowledge and our experiences and our goods have been passed down from generations that we paid for every day of our lives. And when we get old, the quality and standard of living has changed. The medical technology and expenses for research and development and treatments is beyond what a normal person can pay singularly, much less be subject to the manipulation of the guidelines that insurances will insure a person makes it an unfair market. And so I just want to say to these kids, you know, your parents and the adults of your society have given everything they have that you can go on. Do you want us to destroy everything, every building, every institution, school system, so you can start all over and see how much in debt you're going to be? That's my comment.
All right. Thank you, Jill.
Yes.
David Drucker.
Well, she brings up an interesting point in terms of what the baby boomers and the older generations have built up. You know, interestingly enough, as people are living longer and the number of elderly in this country continues to go up, there's a possibility of a great sort of cost shift and shift of wealth from younger generations who are on the hook to pay for Social Security and Medicare. I mean, because of the increase in medical technology, because people are living longer, the only way to keep those systems afloat are for more and more tax dollars potentially from younger generations to be shifted into those programs to keep them solvent. So it's sort of a two-way street with clearly older generations having paved the way for a society that affords people a lot of opportunity that are younger. On the other hand, people that are younger are now on the hook for programs like Social Security. And while, you know, I'm sure the Social Security checks will keep coming by the time younger generations retire, you know, whereas my father's generation is earning interest in a sense, Social Security was a good investment for him and that he'll get back more money than he put in. Percentage-wise, younger generations don't necessarily have that same opportunity. They'll get a check, but it'll be at a loss.
We have an email here from Byron who says, I lost my job in 2006 and ran out of my unemployment benefits in 07. It seems like this extension only helps people who are losing their benefits now rather than those of us who have been drowning for months and even years. Why am I not eligible? So Byron hitting on the way the unemployment system is set up. Is there help for those who have been unemployed for more than 6 months?
You know, that's a good question, and that I can't answer directly, and I wish I could. I know that the unemployment extension has now gone on, I believe, longer possibly than it ever has with the program. Usually, unemployment benefits are afforded to somebody for a period of 3 months or 6 months. I think, you know, we're now running at a period of over a year with some people being on the benefits, but I can't answer his question directly. I just don't know the answer.
We'll take our second break right now and welcome more of your calls as we talk about the lag in unemployment benefits that happened this week as the Senate went to spring recess. And we're happy to take your calls at 1-800-642-1234. Is this what you were hoping from your Congress? Is the Senate justified in this lag? And how do you feel about that expiration in unemployment benefits? The number 1-800-642-1234. And we're joined this morning by David Drucker, a staff writer at Roll Call. I'm Veronica Rickert, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert back with you. I'm in this week for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, as we're joined this morning by David Drucker, based in Washington, D.C. He's a staff writer for Roll Call, the newspaper of Capitol Hill. And we're taking your phone calls this morning about the lapse in unemployment benefits at 1-800-642-1234. And another phone call here, we have Jan joining us from Richland. Hi, Jan.
Hi. First of all, I'd be very curious, in all the people who are against this, how many of them have jobs, and if they do, how they would feel if they were on the unemployment. But my question is, to me, if the more people that drop off or start losing their unemployment, it seems like it would be a domino effect, more home foreclosures, less spending, and then you're right back to, you know, the economy getting worse. I understand that they have to pay for it, but if you talk to somebody who doesn't have, you know, is about to run out of unemployment, it just seems like they're going to have to quit spending, and I think that's a problem. I think that's a huge problem. I'll take my comment off the air. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Jan. And Jan voicing the concern that has been raised that what we're doing is we're taking money that would by necessity go right back into the economy and we're cutting it off.
Look, she's making a very good point, and economists actually differ on this. There are some that say at some point you need to allow unemployment benefits to run out, because otherwise what you end up with is an economy that treads water but doesn't really grow. You know, on the other hand, if you don't continue to provide these benefits, it can put more homes in jeopardy in terms of foreclosures, like she said, and there's just simply less consumer spending. So it's tricky. Again, the interesting thing about what's going on in Congress is the fight isn't over whether to extend or not. It's a political argument over the deficit and whether or not to pay for it. Democrats argue that it should be categorized under emergency spending, you know, such as the kind of spending that's used to help states and localities recover from hurricanes and floods. And Republicans are arguing that it should be paid for. And it's interesting that I think the bills that are being brought up for the extension are now coming up every 4 or 5 weeks. They're not trying to deal with, for instance, a six-month extension all in one fell swoop. And I think that's because, particularly on the Democratic side, and they control the agenda because they run Congress, both houses, they like the idea of bringing this up every month and forcing Republicans, as they see it, to either vote with the Democrats or vote against unemployment because they think it will possibly help them in November.
And I guess the Democrats expected it to move through this time through unanimous consent, and that didn't happen. Why didn't they see it coming?
Well, I think they did see it coming is what I'm telling you. You know, they always ask for unanimous consent, but I think everybody knew this was coming. And I found it interesting that in the Senate they ended up working out a deal, and the deal was supposed to be they will pass a two-week extension to get them through the two-week spring recess, which is concluding at the end of this week, and then they would come back next week and they would pick up the debate, but at least people would not lose their benefits while Congress is out of town. But House Democrats, at least the leadership, said no to that. They weren't going to also approve it because it would have had to go from the Senate to the House for approval, and so that the Senate deal ended up not happening because of that.
Let's move on to Sharon calling us from Duluth. Hi, Sharon.
Oh, my. I just listening to this last explanation kind of makes me wonder if common sense is something that they do want input with. Because I was thinking in terms of Republican concerns about spending money. And my call was about the cities and counties and infrastructure that is so, so in bad shape in this country. I think 15 years ago, infrastructure would have been so low on my list, I wouldn't have, you know, paid any attention to it. But in our cities and our counties, our roads and our sewer systems and everything, nothing has been kept up to any kind of degree. And it's all starting to become this huge expense and this huge need that isn't make-work stuff like some people might consider the CCC used to be or whatever. And it seems like a common sense argument that money be distributed, earmarked for this kind of thing for the cities and counties would create so many jobs. And the Republicans, it would seem, would not have the argument that we are just throwing money at something. We are actually getting something for our money that's actually needed. You know, I think there's some feeling on some people's part that people shouldn't be paid for not working. It's too much like welfare. But just listening to the machinations of both parties makes me a little discouraged and wondering if real common sense, concrete, down to earth, what do we need and what should we do about it ever even gets considered. So that was an extra I didn't have in my original thought. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call, Sharon. And we talked a little bit about this earlier. Your colleague, John Stanton, thought it pretty unlikely that there would be some sort of public works program like that.
Well, part of that is because the economic stimulus bill that was passed just after President Obama took office was a very massive bill. And you know, as we understand it, there are still billions and billions of dollars of projects and appropriations for public works projects and other similar things that are still to be rolled out both this year, next year, and the year after. And additionally, because of concerns about the federal deficit, the idea of appropriating another bill worth several billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars, there's just really no appetite for that right now in Congress. And, you know, I feel for the caller who's looking for common sense. It's just it's hard to come by in Washington, and everything, you know, everything gets imbued with a little politics because the argument in Congress is never just what to do, but how to do it.
And what is your take on that as someone who's been covering Congress?
Well, you know, whether I've covered a state legislature or I've covered Congress, that's the nature of our system. In a sense, I compare it to religion, you know, to the three monotheistic religions, if you will, right? All three religions believe in one God, and yet they all have different ideas about what you're supposed to do in terms of your path to God or honoring God. They're just different rules, and sometimes there are arguments. Politics is about that. It's not just about creating jobs, but how. It's not just about economic growth, but what kind of economic growth, what industries should benefit. It's not just about building a freeway that's needed, but what wages should be paid to the construction workers who build a freeway. Should they be union or non-union? I mean, these are the things that politicians argue about from Congress all the way down to city councils. And it's part of having a political system. You know, and some people said it's the worst system they've ever seen, except, you know, all of the other options.
What do you make of the climate in Congress since the health care reform? Are people sharpening their knives, or is it just sort of business as usual?
Well, it's hard to tell, and I'll explain it this way. I mean, clearly there were a lot of hurt feelings. It was a very partisan issue, whether you were on the winning legislative side, which is the Democratic side, or you were on the Republican side. And Republicans feel they won the battle of public opinion, even though they lost the battle for the bill. It angered a lot of people, and people were upset. But in the Senate, there's still some cooperation on some minor issues going on. There still may be cooperation on financial regulatory reform. In the House, you know, we haven't really seen bipartisan cooperation, since 4 or 5 years ago. But in the House, where it's all about numbers and winner take all, it's not like the Senate. But things will get done in any case. But I will tell you that it's an election year, so it may have been an easier question for me to answer had health care passed, you know, last spring or last summer. But once you get into an election year, now, you know, we're 7 months away, less than 7 months away, and it gets harder and harder for bipartisan cooperation when a major election is going to happen, and this election looks like it's going to be major one way or the other. So, yeah, did health care, you know, hurt the atmosphere a little bit? Yeah, sure, it probably did poison the atmosphere, but were big things with a lot of bipartisan cooperation going to happen at this point? Probably not.
Mm. Well, let's take another phone call here as we get toward the close of the hour. We've got Richard with us from Blair. Hi, Richard.
Hi, how are you doing? My concern, and I really do feel, when you're out of work and can't bring home money to the family, that is a big problem. But our national debt, it's not so much our national debt, it's our national debt to China. We owe them, what, close to $1 trillion? And they're now using this money to move around the world and buy up corporations and natural resources in every continent in the world. This is going to make our future even more costly. And besides that, China is now toying with the idea of changing the monetary exchange between the yuan and the dollar. That may even complicate the problem.
Thank you for your call, Richard. And David Drucker?
Well, I think this is going to be a topic of discussion in a lot of campaigns and you know, probably the next presidential race in 2012. People are concerned. Again, it's interesting to me that there's a greater concern about this than I've ever seen from rank and file voters, and it'll be interesting to see how it colors the political landscape and what the government does, what both the administration does and Congress does after the November elections to try and deal with this, if they do anything at all.
And why don't we close out the hour with an email here? We've only got about a minute or so left, but this from Eric in Green Bay, who writes, unemployment benefits have been allowed to become the focus of federal deficit reduction. While nothing is done to help the true victims of this depression or to correct the underlying problems, the American dream is slipping away from me and countless others. I see no prospect for the future as long as the petty bickering continues. Is this run-of-the-mill disillusionment with Congress and the political system, or is this something more?
Well, I think it's something we've seen before. I'll put it that way. I mean, clearly people are more dissatisfied with Congress now than they were 10 years ago, probably even 6 years ago. But this is something the country periodically goes through, and whenever the economy is rough, and whenever you combine that with insecurity over foreign policy issues, of which, you know, that still exists, people are worried and they become unhappy with their elected officials. I think something that might help from a political sense, even if it didn't really affect policy, would be to see divided government in Washington with one party controlling the White House and the other party controlling Congress, because what happens then is both sides tend to negotiate more because they need each other and they have no other choice, and Americans tend to feel better about their government when people are getting along.
Well, David Drucker, thank you so much for your time this morning. We really appreciate it.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Our guest there, David Drucker, who is a staff writer at Roll Call, the newspaper of Capitol Hill since 1955. I'm Veronica Rickard. I'm in all this week for Kathleen Dunn. And we want to thank this morning Erica Janik for answering your phone calls, Chrissy Pease for booking this program, and Rhonda Fanning. If you'd like a copy of this program, call the radio store at 1-800-747-7444. Ask for program 47D. I'm Veronica Rickert on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.